Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Yay.
Okay, what's it say? I got a new recorder. That's very exciting for me, I guess. I've been borrowing my spouse's, so I'm just glad to get this back to you. What else to tell you? I have three really big demos that would be very exciting, and I'm not sure I'm going to get to all three of them today. So I should probably get rolling so we can at least get to say one of them. First some administrative stuff. So I did release homework one on the Sakai site, so you should be able to download that. It's basically a set of lecture note type slides with some questions on them, on about barcodes and about circuits and the various kinds of stuff that we've been talking about. So what you're going to need to do is get access to those, answer the questions, and turn in your answers through the Sakai site. And they'll get shunted over to Monica, and she'll grade them on the Sakai site, and everything should be all accessible so you can see what the grades are and so forth. Yeah?
That's on the Sakai website for the homework. You just put in the number and then the answer, and then you just email that.
I didn't follow. So you're saying maybe it would help if I edit Sakai site then? Because I'm not sure what you're referring to. So in the assignment, you say you go in to check out the assignment, and there's a place to type. Yes, you can either type your answers in there, or some people, for reasons that it's difficult for me to understand, prefer doing things in Word. And if you do things in Word, you can actually take your Word file and upload it to the Sakai site. So you don't have to do it in the text box. It's certainly easier for me to read there, but Monica knows how to do the Word file, so if you can, whichever way you're more comfortable. Does that answer the question? Actually, it's maybe I don't need this. Okay. And you want to look at them before Tuesday. They're due Wednesday. If you look at it before Monday and you have questions, then you can ask me in class on Monday and I can clarify some stuff. So it might be a good idea to check it out before Monday. Otherwise, we will have some, and this is inevitable, but we'll have some kind of last-minute excitement where people realize that they didn't actually understand the question or so forth. Then there'll be lots of back and forth. Simpler, more calming for everyone if you just check things out and bring some questions in on Monday. If you have any questions now, if you had a chance to look at it, I can possibly answer some questions now, but otherwise probably you need a little bit of time to kind of check it out and think about it. Questions aren't very different from what we've been doing in class in terms of clickers. So I don't think it'll be a shock to anyone, but I always somehow manage to make something unclear, and so I'll have to clarify. All right, good? So that's item one. You should turn them in before Wednesday. If for some reason you can't, there's a little bit of a grace period. Just ask me, and I'll probably say it's okay. And both the TAs have now said that they'll be having some office hours, so you can find Ari and it doesn't actually list where the offices are, but I'll put them on the website. You said you weren't even quite sure where.
No, it's 14.
Hill
418.
418. And Monica's is also Hill 4 something something on the hallway. So that'll be on the website at the top. But anyway, Tuesdays 10:30 to 12:30 is Ari, who's here, and Monica, who will be here shortly, on Mondays 1 to 3. I don't have regular office hours, but if there's something that you'd rather discuss with me, we'll exchange email and we'll set up a time that works. One of the things that we've been doing for people who haven't been able to make it to a lecture or didn't have your clicker yet at some point, everybody should answer all the clicker questions for every lecture. So if you're not at the lecture and you can't actually click in, I think this is what Monica's doing right now. She has one for each lecture. There's a little quiz on Sakai that has the clicker questions. So you can just answer them on Sakai. The lecture itself, if you didn't hear the lecture, is being recorded and then is also available on the podcast section of Sakai. So you should have what you need. If that doesn't work for you for some reason, let me know. But otherwise, it's cool. And if you can't show up one day, you've got somebody came to me last year because she was out of town for a national competition of cheerleading. Like, that's cool. No one's ever said that to me before. So, and if you have something like that, just don't worry about it. Just get the lecture off the web. If you have additional questions that you weren't able to ask because you weren't in class, just send an email or visit the TA during office hours. It should all be fine. All right? We good? Anything else? All All right, so we'll do a couple quicker questions to reinforce stuff from last time. One thing for the demo, one of the demos today, I'm going to actually have you click on stuff. It's going to do a magic trick and read your mind. And to do that, it needs to know whose mind is whose clicker. And I have everybody who is registered for the class except for these people. So if you're one of these people, the demo won't work today, but do make sure to send me email with your clicker number. It's the 8-digit little code that's on the bottom back of your clicker. And then that'll be entered. This list was like 4 or 5 names longer a couple minutes ago, and clicker information has been flowing in. So I feel confident that we'll be able to get these all filled in very little time. All right, so some pickup questions. All right, assuming this is all there, which I think it is. All right, so here's a little circuit. We've got a battery, we've got a light bulb, and then we have this thing in dashed lines that's doing some kind of logical function of its inputs. X controls one of the inputs, and Y is a switch that controls the other input. What are the conditions under which Z is on? Z is true when what? What combination of X and Y? So that's the question. I'll give you 5 more seconds to laugh at me, and then I'm going to stop the clicker. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Change your click now. If you didn't match the answer that was visible on the slide until a moment ago. All right, so this one isn't really deeply hard. The thing that's misleading about it is that the answer is not actually one of the choices. So here's how it goes. So as I hope you recall, these relay boxes work as follows. If there's power on the top line, that causes the bottom line switch to be open, so electricity won't flow through it. If there's no power on the top line, then the bottom line is closed, and so power can flow through it if there's power on that line. The way that this is wired, the top one has power all the time. Doesn't matter what X and Y are. So that means that switch in that box is open all the time, which means no matter what X is, electricity is not going to come out the bottom of that relay. So X is irrelevant. So no power is going to flow into the top of the second relay, so that switch will remain closed, and whatever electricity is on this wire will flow to Z. So if Y is true, if the switch is closed, the light bulb will light up. If Y is open, then it won't. So the equation that we get in that case is Z equals Y. The light bulb, the state of the light bulb is whatever the state of the Y switch is. The X one's irrelevant. Okay? So if you figured that out and you went looking for it, you would notice that it's not in the list. Unless you went looking and noticed that it was... actually had it in the little comments to myself that you weren't supposed to see, but there it was right on the screen. The answer was Z equals Y, which in this case is none of the above, because it's not in the list. So E was the answer I was looking for. And I assume that, you know, at some point you're just going to get flummoxed by the fact that the answer wasn't up there. So some people may have chosen a different answer just because they didn't see the one they wanted. Any other questions about it, though? If you got a different answer and you thought it might have been right, maybe I can clarify. Otherwise, yeah, go ahead.
Isn't A technically correct, too? Because for X and Y would be true, since X is irrelevant, Z is that right?
Okay, so that makes some sense. But then this would if it really worked like it did in A, then if y is in the true position and x is in the false position, then that equation says that the light should be off. But if you actually do that, you'll notice that the light is on, and so something's not right. So the first equation doesn't quite describe the circuit, but you're right. If you delete the x from that, then both A and B give you the right answer. If you make x fixed to be true, no, sorry, true in the first one, false in the second one. But that's not quite what this means. We want an equation that actually captures exactly the circuit. So it didn't quite work. All right? Okay, Ed. All right, so this next one, all the information you need for this is on the slide, but if you remember the way that the discussion went last time, it might make it a little easier, but I'm not entirely sure. But way back when, we showed how to make a NOT gate using one relay component. We showed how to do an AND gate with two relay components, and an OR, if you just put two wires together, is essentially an OR, so you don't need any relays for that. Last time, we built up an if-then-else gate that took two ands, one or, and one not. And we also showed how to take five of those if-then-else gates to make an if-then-else five gate that would let five signals go through, or different five signals go through, depending on whether the control bit was on. So that takes five of those gates, that's made out of those gates, that's made out of relays. How many relays altogether does it take to make an if-then-else five gate? It's like that St. Ives thing, you know, when I was going through St. Ives, I met a man with seven wives, and every wife had seven sacks, and every sack had seven cats, and every cat had seven kittens. Kittens, cats, sacks, wives. Now I'm just talking about that. Sorry. You've got a gate that takes a bunch of inputs. What was it? It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a control bit. And it does a bunch of stuff on the inside, and then 5 bits come out. All right, and this was an if, then, else, 5 gate. What it says on the slide is if you want to build one of these things, you build it out of if-then-else gates. And in fact, it takes 5 of them. So inside this box, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are if-then-else gates. All right, okay, well great. How do you build an if-then-else gate? It says if you want to make an if-then-else gate, you need two AND gates, one OR gate, and a NOT gate. You have to wire them together in a certain way, but that's not what the question's about. All that matters is that we have an AND gate, another AND gate, an OR gate, and a NOT gate. All right? Well, we're trying to figure out how many relays are in this altogether. Well, each of the AND gates, it says, takes two relays. So there's two relays in that box. There's another two in that box. There's no relays in the OR gate. There's one relay in the NOT gate. So how many are in the if-then-else gate? How many relays are in the if-then-else gate altogether?
Five.
Five, right? So this guy has 5 relays in it. How about this guy? This is another if-then-else gate. It's got another 5 relays in it. And this one's got 5, and this one's got 5, and this one's got 5. So the if then else 5 gate altogether has got 25. Alright? Because the if then else gate is made out of smaller things, which are made out of smaller things, which are made out of smaller things, which are eventually made out of relays, and that was what we were asking. How many of those relays altogether does it take? So the reason that, I mean, ultimately this ended up being the question, what is 5 times 5? Right? So it's not, again, it's not a hard question, but the thing that I want to emphasize is that this is how we do things in computer science. We want to build something, we build it out of components. Each of those components is built out of simpler components and simpler components. And then at the bottom, in this case, there were relays. Or if you know, or transistors if we're building it out of like building on a silicon chip. So just want to kind of reinforce this idea that complicated things are made out of simpler things, but they're actually made out of them. So ultimately, you go all the way down, and this big box is just filled with 25 relays wired up in a certain way. Now, if I gave you 25 relays and asked you to wire it up, it could seem very well overwhelming at first, until you realize that you shouldn't think of it as 25 relays wired together. You should think of it as 5 if-then-else gates. And each of those is really simple, because it's just an and, two ands, and an or, and a not. And then you know how to make the ands. And so everything kind of falls into place. Everything, all 25 of them have a role to play, but it's in the context of their kind of subcomponents that they need to accomplish. All right, so 25. Yeah, okay.
Will it always have zero relays?
I think that the pros would actually probably build one with more. Because the problem with actually making an OR gate by just wiring wires together is that I think there's a little bit of a power drain each time you do that, because there's a little bit of resistance. And so I think sometimes they'll use, in the book, Hill talks about restoring logic. And what restoring logic does is it makes sure that you're always getting fresh power at every place in the circuit. In which case, you might actually want to use relays, or transistors, as the case may be. So no, but this is just this one concrete example. Alrighty, Daddy, what else we got? Okay, so. We haven't done this in particular, but you should be able to kind of step through all steps. So what I've got here is a formula that says Z is, so X and Y each can be true or false, but Z is always going to be X and not Y. So which of these truth tables is exactly that formula, X and not Y? So you see all four combinations of X and Y, and then there's a value for Z. The value, we're looking for the table where the value of z is exactly x and not y. So remember how these truth tables work. All four combinations of the inputs are all laid out, and now the question is, well, what is z? If x is false and y is false, what is z? Well, in this equation, actually there's only one way for z to be true. The only way z is true is if x is true and not x is true. Yes. It would be very difficult for it to be true if x is true and not x is true, because they can't happen at the same time. So let me say that again. The only way for Z to be true is if X is true and not Y is true. In other words, Y is false. Right. So X is true and Y is false. That's this row. So that's the only way Z is true. Otherwise, it's false. Yeah?
The segment that says not Y.
Yes.
That means that Y is not true.
It means, right, so this is not Y is an expression that's true only when Y is not true. In other words, it's false. Another way to think about it is it takes whatever the value of Y is and flips it around. And so not Y is the opposite of what Y is. So it's sort of like, you know, minus M, right? It takes whatever the value of M is and negates it. So if it's like negative 17, then minus M is 17. So if Y is true, not Y is false. If Y is false, not Y is true. There's something. You had something.
But I thought Z
had
to be X.
Z, so this is, okay, so you want to parse it this way, right?
Okay.
Z is equivalent to this expression. This expression is X and not Y. So X is true and Y is false. X is true and Y is false.
Okay.
Yeah, if you thought of it as X equals, or Z equals X and something else, then you'll be misled. All right? So I'm getting the feeling that maybe this wasn't
the easiest question for everybody.
Well,
see, yeah, that's what I got. So false, false, true, false. False, false, true, false, see.
Good.
All
right.
Hang on. Okay, we'll do this one. There was a little bit of confusion. I think most of the people got it by the end, but there was a little confusion about what this if then else thing meant.
So here's a concrete example. We've got if one expression, then some other expression, else the third expression. And they involve x's and y's, and let's just say x is false and y is true. So if x is false and y is true, what's the value of that if then else sequence? True or false? So if-then-elses, how do they work? If the if part is true, then you do the then part. Otherwise, you do the else part. So you know, if you're happy and you know it, that's a logical expression, then clap your hands. The implication is else, don't clap your hands. All right. So if the first thing is true, then the answer is the second one. Otherwise, it's the third one. Is the first thing true? Is X or Y true? Yeah, right? Because Y is true, so X or Y is true. Then, so we need to return as our answer whatever's in that second place, which is X and Y. Is X and Y true?
No.
No, it's false. So the whole thing should be false.
I thought it was the other one.
Oh, very evenly split.
Wow, we're going to gain at E, probably at the last moment.
All right, so did that explanation help at all? Yeah, go ahead.
If X would have been true on that, would it be true?
I don't know. Let's think it through. If X is true, so
let me actually change it on the slide so we don't get too confused.
All right, so now X is true. How do you make X true? All right, X is true and Y is true. So if X or Y, is X or Y true?
Yes.
Yeah. Then X and Y, is X and Y true?
Yes.
Yeah, so then the answer would have been true. Yeah, what if it was, what if they were both false?
Make this one false.
This one false. Is X or Y true?
No.
So then we have to go to the third expression, which says not X and Y. Not X and Y. So not X is true, but Y is false. So not X and Y is false. So we still would have gotten false as the answer.
Okay.
The other time, I was not sure whether I should do this example or not. Let me do this example. So there are sometimes people use the, or mathematicians will use these if-then-else expressions where there's always, this is always a Boolean. The first part is always either true or false. But you can have other things in the other boxes, like clapping your hands. Or here's an example. If x is less than 0, then minus x, else x. Anybody know what this is? Yeah, go ahead.
Gives you the absolute value.
Right, this is one way of defining the absolute value function, right? Take x, you ask the question. This is a Boolean expression, it's either true or false. If x is less than 0, in other words, if it's negative, then we return negative x, we make it positive. Otherwise, we just leave it alone. That's absolute value. And that's all that this kind of thing is too, except now instead of returning numbers, we're returning other Boolean or the values of other Boolean expressions, trues and falses. So we have false and true, but that's false. The only way we can make it true is if both sides were true. So false and true is false, so we end up with not false, which would be true. All right. Any other comments or questions? We'll tear on.
When doing the first part, instead of not, that's the same thing as saying not z and not y.
So what can we? So if this were like numbers and algebra, and that was a negation sign, you might kind of push it all the way through into the parentheses, right? So you can do that. So let's see what that does.
Isn't that like the Morgan law?
Yeah, we can do Morgan this. I don't know if anything interesting will happen though, but we can try it. All right. So not of an expression with an and in it. What you have to do is not the first thing, then or, not the second thing. So this is really the same as not. Okay, the first thing, or not the second thing. But now we can keep pushing that not through. The not of something with an or is not the first thing and not the second thing. So this is actually not Z and not Y, or not X and not Y. So we can factor the not y's out. I don't know that it gets any simpler. But this is if you need to push nots through, that's what you have to do. You negate the before that the and, you turn the and into an or, and you negate the after the and. Alright, so last time I described a foolproof, never will fail mechanism for turning a truth table into a Boolean expression. That was this thing. And in this, we only ever got ands and ors and nots. And what's cute is that's because you only ever need ands and ors and nots. Anything you want to build, you can build out of these pieces. So as a concrete example of that, here's a little gate. The gray box here is a gate that takes inputs A and B, and four additional inputs saying what the output should be if both of them are false, if just B is true, if just A is true, and if both of them are true. And so what this does, this can do any other logic gate. This is one logic gate. I don't have to touch it again. I can program it, in some sense, to be any other logic gate by giving it different inputs. So if I want this to be an AND gate, I put the D00 to be a false, and the D01 to be false, and D10 to be false, and the D11 to be true, and then the output will be whatever A and B is. It'll compute the logical AND of A and B. And I can make any of those 16 tables that I had up on the screen last time just by changing the values that are coming in on the side here. So this is kind of cute. It's a universal logic gate. It can act like any other logic gate just by changing its inputs. And if you notice, it's made out of NOTs and three gates and OR four gates. Does anybody remember what's in an OR four gate? If we were to peel back the cover, what's inside of this? The OR four gate takes four inputs and computes the OR of them. It says, are any of these true, yes or no? And we can build that out of other gates, but does anybody remember what those gates were? How would you do an OR 4 if you had to figure it out? We're saying we want something. I'll finish the sentence. We want something that if the first one's on, then the output should be on. The second one's on, then the output should be on. If the third one's on, the output should be on. If the fourth one's on, the output should be on. But if they're all off, then the output should stay off. So what?
Isn't it just the OR of two OR gates?
An OR gate whose inputs come from the input of two other OR gates that are taking inputs from the four original inputs. Yeah, is that where you were going to? Anybody else? Anyone want to change that? So an OR 4 gate is made out of three OR gates. And of course, we can make an OR 10 gate out of nine OR gates, like that. So this just has OR gates in it. The AND 3 gate is the same idea. It's got two AND gates in it. So this whole thing, it just has NOTs and ANDs and ORs, and yet it can act like any other gate. So that's why these ands and ors and nots are really kind of a nice thing to put at the bottom level of this hierarchy. Here's one other gate that we might need later. This is bit equality. So it takes two bits as input, bit one and bit two, and the output is true if those two input bits are the same. If they're both true, the output is true. If they're both false, the output is true. And otherwise, if they don't match, then the output is false. So that's an equal function. And so, you can trace it out, but it does the right thing. All it's doing is it's saying, either they're both on, that's top AND gate is saying that top AND gate's output will be true if both of the inputs are true, and that means they match. The other way that they can both be true, sorry, they can both be equal, is if the NOT of the first gate and the NOT, or the first bit, and the NOT of the second bit are both true. They're both, in other words, both bits are false. So we get an AND on the top one, we get two NOTs going into an AND, and either of those two cases work, so we have an OR at the output. And so that actually computes whether or not two bits are equal. So we may need that later. Equality is a useful thing to do with computing. In fact, you can also compute the quality of a whole group of bits. Say we have 5 bits and another 5 bits, we want to know, is this the same pattern? 10111 should match 10111. So by ANDing together, by AND fiving, I guess, 5 equal gates together, are the first 2 bits equal, and the second 2 bits are equal, and the third 2 bits are equal, and the fourth 2 bits are equal, and the fifth 2 bits are equal, then the whole thing must be equal. And so that's what this little gate does. Right, so you can compute, again, once you have the ability to test 2 bits for equality, you can use that to do other things. So here's my equal 5 gate. It's got 5 equal gates, one each for comparing each of the bit positions. And then when all is said and done, it takes the output and sends it through an AND 5 gate. They all have to be equal for the bit strings to be equal. But here's what I wanted to show. We can now peel back, just to think about what's going on inside the equal gates. Each of the equal gates, that took a long time. Each of the equal gates is itself made out of 2 NOTs, 2 ANDs, and an OR. And you can see it's just copies of the same thing over and over again. Now, I don't think I did this, but you can then peel back this, you can imagine peeling back this AND, and what would be inside of that? What's inside of an AND? How did we make AND gates before? We made them out of chickens. That's right. M&M's. No, what did we made them out of something. Relay gates. Yeah, so there's relays inside of this. That's right. And the NOT gate has a relay inside of it. If we keep looking in deeper and deeper, it's just relays at the bottom. And the AND 5 gates made out of AND gates, which then are themselves made out of relays. Alright. So, if you wanted to count up the gates in an equal 5 gate, this is the same process that we did in the quicker questions in the beginning. Last time I briefly asked you, what about generalizing these sorts of things? So an equal 5 gate tells you if two groups of 5 bits are equal to each other, but you can generalize that to any k, any value. And so, for example, just look at this one. The equal k is made up, you take as input 2 k-bit blocks, and then it returns an output saying whether or not true if they match and false otherwise. And you can build it up the same kind of way that you built up the equal 5 gate. All right. So this is just sort of cute, but maybe not so important. We looked at the 16 different truth tables that you can get with 2 inputs. How many different truth tables can you get if there's no inputs? Well, if there's no input, then the output's always true or it's always false. There's 2 possibilities. No. There's no inputs. Why does it say 1? I never thought it was 2. No inputs.
Why is the input like the exponent? Shouldn't it be 2?
I think it should be 2. The first one should be 2 even according to my own little function there, right?
No. It's 2 to the 1 is 2.
Two
yeah.
Yeah.
It's 1, 2 to the 1 is 2. Right, so the formula is right, but I filled it in wrong. Alright, yes, see, it should be 2, and lo and behold, it's 2. Alright, if there's 1 input, what are the different gates? Actually, we have names for some of these. So you have 1 input, X is coming in, you're going to build, it's going to do something to it, and it's going to produce 1 output bit. What are the different relationships that the input and the output can have? What are the different gates you can have? Well, one thing is it could completely ignore the input and always be false. It could completely ignore the input and always be true. It could take the input and just pass it along. And what's the last possibility? It takes the input and flips it. And that had a name. Do you remember the name? What do you call the gate that takes whatever the value going into it is and turns it into the other value? So false coming in, true comes out, true coming in, false comes out. That's a NOT gate. So those are the 4 combinations. We looked at the 16 different combinations when you've got 2 inputs. What happens if you've got 3 inputs?
That goes up to 256. You've got four inputs, it goes up to 65,536. Five inputs, I don't know, like 4 billion or something like that.
I don't remember.
Six inputs, you get, there it is. Doesn't fit in the box anymore. Seven doesn't even fit on one line. So this is now, the number of different possible functions of just 7 bits is astronomically huge. And so nobody studies all these different individual gates. Oh, that's, you know, a FRED 2639 and sub 93 gate, right? You just, there'd be no point in naming them all. We start to talk about them at a higher level. So, all right. But nonetheless, all those gates, all those gazillions and gazillions of gates can all be made out of NAND stores and NOTs. All right, so if this works, we'll do a demo now. Wake some people up. People are getting tired of the Boolean algebra. All right, so let's say we've got 4 bits. So they can all be false. They can all be true. And there's a whole bunch of other combinations in between. How many different combinations are there? 4? More? Less? Right? So we can make that one true. I mean, we can just go all higgledy-piggledy and just start naming them and try to make sure that we don't miss any. But if we're going to be really systematic, let's try to be really systematic. So, all false. Well, we can make the last bit true. I don't know. How can we be systematic? How can we make sure that we get all of them and no extras and don't miss any? So we need a systematic way of stepping through and making sure we get all the different combinations. Any thoughts? Honking out over there. I'm gonna yawn. Bummer. All right. I know 3 nice ways to do this. You have a way to do this?
Can you just give us the formula of that?
Probably in a bunch of different ways, yeah. Did you remember anything?
Wasn't it 2 to the 2?
Oh, no, right. So the answer to, no. It's 2 to the 4. There's 16 possibilities, but if we wanted to actually list them, how do we make sure that we get all 16 of them? Like, if you have to name all 50 states, it's a real pain in the butt. It's actually, you can get out to like 30 with no problem, and then, you know, you push for a while, and you're like at 40, 47, 48, and for the life of you, you can't remember the last couple states. With here, we can actually be much more systematic. Unlike the states in the U.S., there's a very consistent pattern to these.
Like, for that, first you start with, you go down the line, then...
Go down the line, is that
what you said? Yeah, go down the line, then you do 2 feet at the end, then you do 2 feet at the front.
Go, so how are you doing that? So how do we get to the next one?
Now it's F, T.
Oh, F, T? Oh, just slide the T's over. Yeah, that would be one way to do it. But then, now what's going to happen... Then where do we go from there?
Then we do false, true, true.
False, true, true. Yeah, I think this is going to be hard to do. I think there's easier ways of doing this. But I do believe that you can make this work. But I want something even simpler. So here's one way to do it. So method one. First, how many different ways can we write down a single bit? Let's write them down. False, true. Okay? So one bit, false, true. Now we've got 2 bits. Here's what I'm going to suggest. 2 bits are made out of a bit and then another bit. So the first bit might be false, and false is going to get paired with each of these other second bits. Alright? So there's 2 combinations when the first bit is false, and there's 2 combinations when the first bit is true. Right, we're just copying these down. We go to 3 bits. We start off saying, well, the first bit could be false. What about the next 2 bits after the first one? Well, there's 4 combinations. Here they are. False, false. False, true. True, false. And true, true. But the first bit might also be true. And what happens to the other 2 bits? Again, we can copy them down from our 2-bit table. True, true, true. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. How are we going to get 16 for 4 bits? We're going to take false combined with all the 3-bit patterns. There's 8 of them. And then we'll do true combined with all these patterns. And we'll get another 8 for a total of 16.
we can just keep doing this over and over again. And you can just start to see these bit patterns as consisting of all combinations of the smaller bit patterns. Alright, good with that? It also helps see why it is that this is 16, this is 2 to the 4th, because we're taking 2 to the 3rd and we're multiplying it by another 2. Right, once with the false in front, once with the true in front. So that's method 1. Alright then. Alright. Here's method 2. And it turns out to give you the same answer as method 1. But it's a different way of thinking about it. So, look at the string. You're going to start off with all f's. Then go to the right-hand side and find the rightmost f and turn it into a t. And any of the t's that were to the right of it, turn those to f's. So watch. So, for example, say we're here, ftf. We go all the way to the rightmost f, which is this guy, and turn it into a t to get our next string. Now that we're here, we find our rightmost f. Well, that's not an F, that's not an F, that's an F. Turn it into a T, and all the things to the right of it, you have to flip to F. So you get this, TFF. TFT, TTF, TTT, and now you know you're done, because there's no more F's left. All right, so this is a more kind of step-by-step way of doing the same thing. You get the same ordering. Start off with all F's. And then we just, you know, sequentially go through until we turn them all to T's using this method. Which maybe by the end of the class we'll be able to do, but not yet, is you write down just the numbers, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and then you turn each of those numbers into binary, and you get exactly these patterns. But we're not quite there yet. But here's what I'd like to do. I want to do a demo of method 2. We're going to count 5 bits, and here's how we're going to do it. So here's a little scratch program I wrote. It's got 5 bits. It's got 6 bits. Alrighty then. Doesn't seem right. I have to do it. Alright. So what we're going to do is it's going to find, remember, 0 is the positive, 1 is the true. So it's going to find the rightmost 0 and turn it into a 1, and then turn all the 1's to its right into zeros. So, what I'd like to do is each time it flips one of the numbers, it's always flipping one of the zeros into a 1. We're going to make a different sound effect for each different position. So when the last bit flips, we'll make that's a fine noise. We could or some other noise. When the second bit flips, we'll make a different noise, and then we're just going to watch it flip up and listen to the pattern auditorially. So here's what I'd like to do. We need to pick sounds for the 5-bit positions. I lost my eraser. All right. That's why I brought the microphone. So, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. All right, so what sound should we make on the bottom bit? And so the bottom bit, notice, is the one that changes the most often. In fact, every other time it flips into being a 1. So we want that to be kind of a short, simple sound, because we're going to hear a lot of it. Any suggestions?
Boom.
Clap. Boom. We'll say boom. It's more dramatic. How about, I like the clap. So just one thing. Okay? So let's record that. See if you can hear a second.
I think it was song.
What's that?
Huh?
All right, so we'll practice. 1, 2, 3.
That's really practice.
All right, recording. One, two, wait, no. Turn the microphone on. One, two, three. That was great. All right, let me see if this recorded. It did record, but we're not hearing it. Why are we not hearing it? Oh, because the volume's turned down. All right. Beauty. All right. So this is clap. Next one up.
Move.
Move. All right, I'm not sure how that sounds in a group, so let's all move. Ready? One, two, three.
Move.
I think it needs to be a relatively short move. I know some people were really, you know, finding their inner cat. Move. Or a staccato move. Okay, ready? One, two, three.
Move.
All right, so this will be our move. Let's record it. Now that it's, you know, we're ready for prime time. Oh, wait, sorry. This is, the clap is now done. We may have to do cough. Oh, what was it called? Do you have a sound? Alright. Now we're on the second bit. This is a move, staccato move. One, two, three,
move!
All right, one.
two, three.
All right, so I think I must have, maybe I deleted the wrong one last time. All right. So start this, we should be able to reset. It went again, and that one went, and then it got wiped out and went to zero. It went again, Now I'm less confident. It ought to be 4. It ought to be 4. It ought to be 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. We should have heard 32 of the class, right? And it was every other one. And notice that it counted up to 63, 64. I mean, that's what it was doing, slowly counting its way up to 64. And in fact, whether you know this or not, the numbers that it was doing up on the screen were actually binary counting from 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 63. This is 63 in binary. All right. And so it was counting, but while it was counting, it was keeping us entertained with the light. All right. So there's lots of these bit patterns come up, and you can see them in a lot of different ways. You can see them as the incrementing sort of thing that we just did. You can see them as patterns where you repeat the bottom block with a 0 on front, you repeat the bottom block with a 1 at the front. You can see them as counting binary. There's lots of different ways to do it. All right, so what I'd like to do next is, maybe I should say a few words. No, I think we're just going to try this out. So what we're going to do is you need to think of a number between 0 and 31, okay? 0 and 31, and you know, if you're the kind of person who takes the number and then changes it partway through the trick, you might want to write it down, just for your own reference, all right? So pick a number and stick with that number throughout the trick. And what we're going to do is we're going to show a series of grids. And for each grid, we're going to click in our clickers, A, if your number is in the grid, and B, if it's not. Okay, so take out your clicker. I need to write it. I'm the kind of person who will forget the number in the middle. That's not going to work. All right. And so you click A or B, and then we'll stop the top clicking clicks. We'll move on to the next grid. We're going to do 5 of these grids. All right.
So,
what's that? Yeah. Unfortunately, the clicker thing only works
when the thing is
when it's down.
Save.
In fact, the whole animation thing isn't going to work now. That's unfortunate. All right. So, here's what I'll do. All right. So there's the first grid. So let's do clicks for the first one. So if your number's in there, click A. Otherwise, click B. We're only going to go 10 seconds on this. We'll call it 15. All right. Now, second grid. If your number's in the grid, click A. Otherwise, click B. Wow, there are lots of people clicking now. I wonder if that's not us. We could be getting bleed from some other class that's clickers. All right, I'm going to stop. Then, all right, third grid. Start. A, if your number's in there. B, if it's not. Oh, we're getting better at this. Or we're getting bleed from another class, all right? 3, 2, 1, okay, stop. Another grid. A, if it's in there, B, if it's not. Okay, then you're stop. So Somebody make eye contact with you. All right, so what's your name?
Luther.
Yeah.
Alden?
All right. Alden. All right, so it says you said 30. Right, okay, moving on. Nicole.
Yeah.
It says you said 28. Yeah, this program is working out swimmingly.
But that is where my clicker's were.
Oh, is that right? Oh, well, thank you for remembering that. All right, so Drew? 17? B-A-A-A-P. Can we edit this Python program on the fly and make it give the right answer? It says no. The first grid would have 4, 5, 6, and 7 in, all the ones that have T in the first position. The second grid would have 2, 3, 6, and 7 in it, all the ones that have T in the second position. And the last grid would have 1, 3, 5, and 7 in it, all the ones that have T in the last position. And so, because you clicked in for each of these grids, you actually told it what the bit was of your number for each of the positions, which it thoughtfully mangled and didn't actually do the right thing with. But that is how the trick was supposed to work. We're at 428. So how does this work? How do we go from bit positions to numbers, what we think of as being regular decimal numbers? So what I'd like to do is I'm going to explain how binary works relatively quickly. I'll show you a video that is also supposed to kind of reinforce this idea, and then next time we'll actually start to work with these and practice. But I want to at least get the idea across quickly. So take the number 207 in decimal. What is 207? Why is 207 207? 207. Why does that mean 207 things? Because of place value notation. What place value notation says is that 2 is not really a 2. It's 2 in the hundreds place. So it's really 2 hundredths. 100 is 10 to the 10 squared. It's 0 in the tens place and 7 in the ones place. So just by the way we write it down, you can actually think of it as a sum. 2 times 100 plus 0 times 10 plus 7 times 1 is 207. Right? This you've been doing for many, many years. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch it on you and I'm going to change the base. For binary notation, instead of having a ones place, a tens place, a hundreds place, a thousands place, we have powers of 2. We have a 1's place, a 2's place, a 4's place, an 8's place, a 16's place, 32, 64, 128, and so on. Which is 2 to the 0, 2 to the 1, 2 to the 2, 2 to the 3, 2 to the 4. Just like decimal, except where the 10 used to live, there's now a 2 there. Now, in decimal, you can have 10 different numbers at each position. In binary, you can have 2 different numbers at each position, 0 and 1. So, we take a number like, that's a binary number across the top, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0. That has a value. And we can express it in decimal by saying, well, there's 1 in the 128th place, there's a 1 in the 16th place, there's a 1 in the 8th place, there's a 1 in the 2's place. So if you added them all up, you discover that that's actually 154. All right? So just to make sure that you're kind of on board with this, how can you tell if a binary number is even? If I give you a number like 10011010, you can convert it to decimal and check if it's even, How do you check if something's even in decimal if the bottom digit is even? But how do you check in binary? So I saw a hand go up in here at the back. Go ahead. If the bottom digit all the way here is zero, then it's even. Why? Because all the other place values have even values to them, right? So the only way you can make an odd number, something that adds up to an odd number, is if this last bit is on, the rightmost bit is on. Okay? So we're going to practice more with this in a bit, but I wanted to kind of introduce this notion before showing you this video, which makes more sense if you have some idea of how binary works.
Yesterday, because I missed lecture on Monday, because I walked in There was some guy with an accent up here or something, so I left.
An axe?
Yeah.
No, an accent.
Oh, okay.
So I was very confused. Like, maybe I left. I went to go do the homework and the production notes, and I saw these videos of kids, and that's why I saw the old Scratch program, too.
Wait, and what was the thing with the Scratch program you said?
It was not.
With all the sound effect. You didn't like my sound effect.